Okay, we are starting right on time, right? Okay, it's 5 o'clock. Thank you for attending the last of our Concurrent Thursday presentations. This is number 176, so if you're not in the right place, now's a good time to go. The title is Reflections on a Thoughtful Faith Community, Staying Meaningfully Engaged in the Struggle. Before we begin, please silence your phones. And we just wanted to remind you that we'll be respectful and attentive and have respectful dialogue. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the only floor, not just the main floor. We also hope you are taking time to purchase goods from the vendors, including booksellers like Benchmark Books. Please support Mormon Studies by supporting our vendors. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep it within that framework of time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. After this session, many attendees are gathering at the local Crown Burger. I have never been. It is a Utah tradition. Please return on time for our two plenary offerings. Dr. Marvin Sweeney from Claremont will be presenting about Scripture, and Gina Colvin and Maxine Hanks have prepared a feminist devotional. Support these wonderful presentations by returning to the venue at 7:45. So, about this presentation, this is a panel from a Thoughtful Faith Facebook support group, and they'll explore how struggles build faith and community. The participants' collective experience is that both online and in-person communities can help reconstruct thoughtful faith and forge bonds of loving support as we deal with challenges to cherished beliefs. So, our panelists today are... Mark Kriegel, in the middle. He is a moderator at a Thoughtful Faith support group and the founder of the Identity Strategy Foundation. His work includes the Unique Identity Program of India, providing suffrage and financial inclusion for over 1.2 billion people. That's a lot of people. So, Gerald Lee, it's right here, a.k.a. the Bishop, lives in Alpine, Utah, and is the lead moderator of a Thoughtful Faith support group. And they were complaining she only had one line of bio. So, yeah. Her Searstone is a heart rock.
Somebody added to it.
And she has a lot of them. Okay, Richard Osler, a.k.a. Papa Osler, and his wife Sheila Jurgens live in Salt Lake City. They are the parents of 6 children and 2 grandchildren. Richard's education focuses on business. He's the owner of the Osler Group. In addition to his LGBT ministry, he serves as a Salt Lake City Temple Ordinance Worker. Now, Susan. I'm getting caught up here. Susan is an artist writer living in Arizona who loves desert living, running, unanswerable questions, wind in her hair, and a bit of green chili in everything. So she's a little spicy. Okay, and Cynthia, who I'm now standing in front of. She's very spicy. Very spicy. Okay, Cynthia lives in Provo, Utah with her husband and 3 kids. She's the owner of Meringue Designs. Did I say that right? Meringue. A web-based business for electronic embroidery designs. Cooking curries and baking sourdough breads are her passions. And she is officially a friend of Mark because she likes the right kind of curry.
That's right.
Instead of the wrong kind of curry. So we will turn our time over to them.
All right, thank you. So just by survey, how many people are participants in a Thoughtful Faith support group from this group? Almost all of you. We're designing this around people who aren't members of the support group.
Thank you.
Because you all that are part of the support group, you know, we had our dinner on Monday night, you know, so this might be a little bit of a repeat. No, it's not a repeat. We're not doing anything that we did on Monday night. This is more about the history of a Thoughtful Faith support group. The reason that we are here and what we did, although the introduction was a pretty good job, I'm not sure who wrote that, but thank you for the introduction, it was very good. So let me just go back 32 years now, 1986. Phil Barlow assembled a group of people or articles that were relevant to people who understood that there were some challenges in the Mormon tradition, but they understood things. And instead of presenting an apologetic view of these things, they were a group of people who tried to express the thoughtfulness behind their faith tradition and how they may see things differently than the traditional sort of view of Mormonism. It wrote 22 monographs, 22 articles in a book called A Thoughtful Faith. It is no longer in print. But the good news is Maxwell Institute is reissuing the book this fall. And Phil has added 22 responses, you know, from various people, either the original authors, if they're still alive, or the others. Now, some of these authors are really, really seminal. So the first article is Richard Pohl's, you know, What the Church Means to People Like Me. And that's available on the internet, and it's about Liahona versus Iron Rod Mormons. Great article. Eugene England has an article in it. Emma Lou Thane. Laurel Thatcher Ulrich. I mean, these are the Richard Bushman. All these are just fantastic articles. Not every article is world-class. There's some that I probably struggle with. Dan and I were re-editing the book in preparation for this publication, and we were just, some of the articles we said, meow, okay. Of all the 22 people that wrote articles 30 years ago, only one of those left the church. Only one. The rest remained engaged, and their articles could have been written by any member of A Thoughtful Faith today. They were that thoughtful. They were that understandable and that sort of thing. So what is a Thoughtful Faith support group? So let me go forward a few years. Of course, John DeLynn was in the 2009 through 2011 time frame, was an active member or a semi-active member of the church. He was engaged in the church, and he had done a lot to establish Stay LDS and to try to have a position that you can be a member of the church in a valid sort of way. And he was struggling with all the different pressures that were happening. He did a podcast, was it with Phil Barlow? Okay, so he agreed with Phil, or Phil agreed to lend his name to a podcast and a Facebook support group to be able to establish a place on Facebook for people like us that want to stay meaningfully engaged. But what is meaningfully engaged? I'll get into that in a minute. But the reason for setting up the podcast and the group was for people who were in the struggle. You know, in other words, one of the first criteria is to make sure that you understand what the major issues are with Mormonism. You know, that you've read the essays, that you understand, and the essays didn't exist, you know, back when we started and we were doing this. Well, the first two or three moderators of A Thoughtful Faith before my time, and I came in about late 2012 and started moderating in early 2013 with Jerry Lee. Brian Johnston, Micah Nicolaisen, and Sarah Collett were the three original moderators of the group, and they were great people. They all left the church. So when they did, it basically said, when you leave the church and you're no longer interested in staying engaged, now, then it's probably time to move on. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we're excommunicating anybody, or even we don't try to actively remove people, but the point being is it's probably more appropriate to move on to other areas. And there are plenty of other Facebook groups that have different focuses. So the purpose of A Thoughtful Faith was this concept of staying thoughtfully engaged in Mormonism, and yet, you know, that term faith is multidimensional. So let me look at these two words. Thoughtful means that when we're looking, I mean, Phil took it from a position of reason. In other words, this is a reasonable faith, that there was logic behind it. I see thoughtful as being that portion of the mind. If you came to my presentation this morning, the thoughtful part is the cerebral portion of our faith, of the wholeness of who we are. So thoughtful certainly has the idea that we're using our thinking mind as we engage in our religion. But thoughtful has another very, very deep meaning to thoughtful faith. Thoughtful means we're thoughtful in how we treat each other. We're thoughtful in how we treat issues. we're thoughtful in terms of, you know, there's the temptation to really come out hard against something. That's part of thoughtfulness, is to say, let's step back and let's be a little bit more considerate in the process. So thoughtful has that dual meaning for me. And of course, faith is hope for things that are not seen but are true. Wait, what is it? Faith is not to have perfect knowledge of things. Wherefore, if we have faith, we hope for things which are not seen and which are true. And I love Alma's words there. And faith to us means not perfect knowledge. We don't know for sure. This is not a group about certainty. So when people come into the group and they are certain about things, it's a pretty good sign that they're not a good fit. Because certainty kind of works against this concept of faith. Alma says that. He says, if you have knowledge, your faith is dormant. So when we look at Alma 32, it really explains faith in a way that's very meaningful to us. Next principle on faith. So it's not perfect knowledge. Wherefore you have hope. So hope is a degree of positive optimism. Okay, it's not necessarily the blind-sided hope. There's a poem called Hope by a Unitarian Universalist minister. I think her name is Spafford. And it talks about the kind of hope that we have in faith. And that hope is not the kind that's the giddy optimism that everything's going to work out right. It's not the kind of thing that says I'm going to be okay no matter what, or that I see some expectation of some reward. Hope is that kind of feeling that I don't know, I'm uncertain, but I'm here and I'm still trying. And that's the kind of hope that we see. So hope in the kind of faith that we see in a thoughtful faith is the one that says we don't have answers, we're not specifically optimistic, but there's a degree of I'm willing to give it a try. I'm willing to stay engaged. I'm willing to be there. Hope for things which are not seen. So this is kind of like, you know, we have to recognize that there's a lot of things that are empirical. Some of the aspects of the history of the church can be empirically defined. For example, what did that person say at that point in time? Did Joseph Smith say that he looked at the scriptures while he was translating? No. And the evidence shows that he was looking and had a seer stone. So that's an empirical proposition. We're not going to debate empirical propositions in a faith environment. It's not really there. So, I mean, if you have evidence about the church and you want to point out all the things that it is, that's fine, but that's not really our focus. Faith is something not seen. It's non-empirical. It's how we live and how we embrace things and how we go beyond it. So faith, hope for things which are not seen. Now, there's another aspect, which are true. Now, what does that mean? It means that any empirical proposition that is proven to be false is not a subject of faith. We cannot have faith in it. Now, what I mean by this is if you want to believe that there is a teapot out in the, flying around the earth, the unprovable sort of thing, can't see it, but really, is it true? Okay? I don't know. Anybody understand Russell's teapot? Did I miss you all on that one? Okay. Look up Russell's teapot. It's a proposition that there's some propositions that you can't prove a negative absolute, but they're so absurd that they're just not true. Okay? So this is called Russell's teapot. It's worth looking up. So a thoughtful faith to us is a very deep, meaningful concept. It means that we're here to be thoughtful, both of each other and in terms of how we think about things. It means that we're faith not in the type of certainty, but rather the kind of struggle that we have. So from my perspective, this group has meant that this is where I get fed. This is where I come to feed. And, you know, I've been in this struggle now for 31 years. I can count the day when my bishop, you know, put me under probation for a reason that didn't make any sense, and I started looking elsewhere because I was in a crisis, as it were. And I can look to that similar time when I had a spiritual experience 31 years ago where I truly felt that God loves me no matter how messed up I am. And that wasn't the message I got at church. So for me, I've been on this journey for 31 years, and I'm still raw in the journey and in the process. And I believe that if you come to a thoughtful faith and have the answers and know everything, I haven't yet figured it out. Maybe I'm just a little slow. But for all of us, this is a support group where we're bringing our own needs into an environment. It's not AA. Well, having been in AA, I can tell you that there's some spirit there that I like. But we come with our problems. We come with our concerns. And the best posts that we see are when people share their raw experience and their vulnerability. That's the ones that just kick it out of the park for me. And I try to do that. Sometimes I have issues going on or with my wife or something like that. And when I have shared what my raw vulnerability is, what comes back is unconditional, powerful love. And it helps me get through another week. Maybe a difficult sacrament meeting or maybe a difficult, you know, event with a home teacher or some aspect that was difficult. Or getting called into the bishop's office for getting on John DeLynn's podcast, you know. Gee, I don't know. But that to me is what a thoughtful faith is. So what we've done here is we've brought together not just moderators, but Papa Osler is here, who's a participant of the group. I wanted to get a blend of, I invited others, one of whom is on the river right now and would love to be here. That would be Joe Bennion. I invited him. He wasn't able to make it. But I wanted to get a smattering, a selection of people who have a point of view and have been in this and understand what the group is about and have been materially affected by it. So I'll start with Geralee, and you can introduce yourself and go on from there.
Thank you. I'm going to try to move this so I'm not standing right in front of Mark. Let's see if this will work.
Can I help you?
Yes, please do. Stand in front of Susan.
No, you're not
Susan.
You're on your own chair.
No, it's good. I'm teasing. It's really great to be here with you in a room with so many people that I love and have gotten to know online. And there's nothing better for me than being able to meet all of you in real life and feel your spirit and your love and see your smiles. So thank you all for being here. I was sitting up here thinking, how did I get here with this incredible group of people to be able to do what we do in a thoughtful faith? And I'll share a little bit about how I got here, but really sometimes I'm just in awe of the people that I'm able to associate with and rub shoulders with. And, you know, the genius of Mark Crago is incredible. When John DeLynn asked us to moderate this group, we had never met. In fact, we didn't meet until about 3 years after we had been working together online in real life. But so a little bit about my story. Mark asked us to share our stories. And a little bit about my story is that I had lived about 50 years in the church, loving it, raising my family in it, being completely dedicated, saying yes to every calling I was ever asked to serve in, and feeling like my life in Mormonism was really happy, and it was working for me. Until one day, our oldest son, who was married with two children in a PhD program, came to us in what I would now call a near-complete faith deconstruction. And he had been the model child in our family, and he was the oldest, the one everybody looked up to. He had, you know, you name it. He'd done all the leadership stuff, AP on his mission, been in a bishopric at BYU. And I couldn't have been more stunned to hear that something like this could happen to him. Of all of my children, the most obedient, the most humble, the most, the largest desire to seek for truth. He came home from his mission just like a sponge saying, I want to know truth. I want capital T truth. I want all these different books. And he gave us a list for Christmas from these different previous apostles and prophets. And now it had all fallen apart for him. And nothing in my years of serving and living happy in the church prepared me for that moment. I didn't have anything in my toolbox that helped me to know how to honor his agency, even though I had been taught about free agency my whole life. I didn't know what to do with it. And so what happened was I literally got online and Googled faith crisis, a term I had never heard before. My son used it. He didn't like it as a description for his own experience, but he said something like, I'm finding other people that are experiencing a faith crisis. So I literally Googled faith crisis, and I came up with a podcast where John DeLynn had interviewed Dan Witherspoon. And there were so many similarities to me in listening to Dan's story, being in this PhD program and how things kind of started to change and fall apart a little bit for him. And I was so touched by the way he talked about it that I reached out to him. I can't remember whether it was through Messenger. I can't remember. But somehow I sent a total stranger a message in a time when I was really hurting. And as I listened to my son, I felt like this is one of the most stable, mentally and emotionally, people that I know. And I think he could, like, have a breakdown. Like, I was so worried about him because he described it as being this grieving process. It's like I lost a loved one, you know, and he was really hurting. And I thought, I could really make this harder for him. Or I could try to be supportive, but I didn't know how to be supportive. So I reached out to Dan, and I sent him an email, and a few days went by, and I got this beautiful long email back from a complete stranger. And he says, I've been thinking about this as I've been driving around, and my main question to him was, how do I support him when I don't get this at all, when I don't understand, when I'm feeling so much fear and pain, and I want to say all these things that I know are not going to be helpful to him. And Dan said a lot of things to me that were really helpful, but one of the things he said was, you need to learn to honor his journey, which it took me a long time to figure out how to do that. It didn't just happen like that, but that was the advice that I held on to. So that began my my introduction into online communities, was Dan Witherspoon and that podcast. And so I decided that if this could happen to this child, I needed to understand it. I needed to know how this could happen, because if it could happen to him, it could happen to anybody. And so I started taking a few things off of my shelf and, you know, trying to learn a little bit about it. And at some point, my husband came home from work, and I was listening to podcasts, and I was reading, and polygamy was one of the first things I took off my shelf, which had always been something I didn't understand. And my husband looked at me, and he said, I think you need to spend equal time with the scriptures and with, as you are, these podcasts. And I'm not really proud of this response, but I did say to him, I did that for 50 years. Now I really want the real story. So anyway, that's how I got to support groups. And one of the things that my son expressed in the couple of years when he was in the wrestle was that he didn't feel like there was a very safe place online to ask questions and get answers and feel support, that there was so much anger and negativity that he just didn't really feel safe. And so I joined a few of the online groups, and then at some point John DeLynn was getting some feedback in, I think it was Mormon Stories, that this really isn't a very safe feeling place for people who are trying to stay and make it work. And so he started this new group, and I went over to the new group, and then the rest is kind of history. But I didn't know anything about moderating a group, but Mark had been doing it for a long time and was really patient with me as I learned. But that's how I got here. And I really believe in the need for this space. And I know it's important. And for some people, they come into a thoughtful faith. We often refer to it as ATF, and we refer to the members as ATFers. Thanks, Dan Witherspoon. And it's just a stop along the way. But it's a place where they can feel like, number one, they're not crazy. And number two, they're not alone. There are other people who have experienced whatever it is that brings them to their faith journey. We were talking about this at lunch, that those of us who do the vetting hear a lot of different stories about what bring people to a thoughtful faith. And they're not all alike. We have common threads that we find, but not everybody comes to this journey through the same thing. And for me, it was a child. It was one of my children. who brought me to a place where I was open, my heart was open, my mind was open to maybe learning things a little bit different way. But I have experienced all these years of goodness in the church, right? Like, I can't deny that that living my life for all those years was really pretty great. But now I can also see that I have adult children. So I have four adult children. The story I told you was about my oldest. And different situations, different stories, no two are alike. But I actually have three that are pretty much out and one who's all in. So it's kind of an interesting space for me to find myself in after checking all the boxes and raising my kids in the church. And, I mean, we did everything right, right? So we thought. I mean, we did everything the best we could to feel like we were doing it right. But to find a place where I can feel some peace in, and I talk about this a lot, and Thomas McConkie talked about it the other night, it's important to me, in ambiguity, in not feeling like it's black or white, it's either or, it's true or it's false, but realizing that there is beauty and that there's goodness and that there's other things we can enjoy along the way on this journey of ours. So that's really helped me as the mother of these four children who are all on these very different paths, you know, and loving and honoring each other. That's something I'm really grateful for, that all of my children really respect the differences. And so that's been a neat thing for me. A thoughtful faith has meant everything to me for the past years in trying to find this equilibrium for myself in sorting it all out. I wanted to share a little quote from my friend Susan here sitting on my left. She said this in a post in ATF recently, and I thought it was so perfect. She said, "No matter how carefully we follow plan A, we are still going to come up with some kind of plan B." And I know that was really true. I found that to be really true in my own life, and having to kind of adjust and accept and learn and honor each other's journeys has been such a big deal for me. I wanted to share with you one post in ATF that I think is a great example for those of you who aren't in the group, just about some of the things that people bring up to the group and seek support on. This is actually written, I'm sharing this with permission of John Grimes, who's a member of our moderation team. And this was a post that he wrote actually in 2015, and that was the year where our Sunday lessons were on the Sabbath day, if you remember. So I'm just going to read it to you. Like many of you, the fifth Sunday lesson in my ward was on Sabbath day stuff. That's fine, and it troubles me not at all. In fact, I think it would be of great benefit to make our Sabbath worship more meaningful. However, we watched a clip, I'm removing the name, of an apostle addressing some general authority group talking about the demographic that most frequently leaves the church, and he made a statement to the effect that if teenagers, the aforementioned group, leave the church, it's because of inadequate gospel teachings and living in the home. To me, this was nothing more than a serving of guilt pie, but the kind I've grown accustomed to ignoring. But then I looked at my wife sitting next to me as she tried unsuccessfully to hold back tears of pain as she wrote a note to herself, quote, "We said family prayer. We went to church. We did family home evening. We did weekly service projects during the summer and holiday season. We read scriptures, and my son left the church. What else can I do?" That was written in capital letters. "We taught him to think for himself. We taught him to ask questions and not accept easy answers to difficult questions. I taught him to use his agency. I would never change that. Does he make choices that are different than the ones I might have chosen? Yes. But does he make those choices wrong? No. Looking at my beloved suffer was more than I could bear, so I raised my hand. I called the apostle's statement a steaming heap of guilt crap served up to parents who don't know what to do with what is already on their plates. I stated that I'm willing to grant said apostle good intentions, but sometimes hurtful statements are just hurtful statements. I said some other things, but my emotional excitement, I don't remember them now. The member of the stake presidency who was teaching the lesson tried to shut me down. Maybe I was misinterpreting. Maybe I misheard. Maybe. And then the craziest thing happened. As the brother from the stake was trying to close down what I was saying, someone else interrupted him and said, quote, "John's right. That's what he, the apostle, said, and it's garbage. God lost a third of his kids. Does that mean he wasn't teaching and living the gospel well enough? Then the floodgates opened. Parents weeping, people that never agreed with me came up and touched me in a display of fellowship with tears in their eyes saying, if you haven't lived it, you just don't know. Mothers saying that the burden of guilt on top of everything else was way too much to carry. People saying that we have to let go and let God be there. We need to trust in the Savior and trust that God's view is broader than man's. We raise our children as best we can, then we let them go, loving them, giving them a place to return that is safe should they need it, and letting them walk their own straight and narrow path, a path we all walk alone, with only the light of goodness and grace to lead us home. I cannot adequately state the feeling of power in that room. A group of saints took ownership of their faith for a moment. It was not a rejection of the teacher or apostle, as much as it was staking an individual claim to the grace of God. So any of you that are in the group know that, you know, a good post can get anywhere between 30 and maybe 100 likes. This had well over 500 likes on it. A lot of people read that and felt the power of that. When we are in the fortunate situation where there may be more than one of us in a ward, and we can speak up, maybe not exactly in these words, but if we can speak up at all and back each other up and allow room for the people who might be silently sitting in that room wishing someone would say something, it's really a beautiful and powerful thing. And sometimes it's surprising who might come up to you later and say, I'm so grateful that you spoke up, or I'm so grateful that you said something. So, you know, we can learn from each other, from our experiences. And even within the focus of actively engaged in Mormonism, we are all kinds of people in this group. And I think we're modeling what we would all hope to have in a big tent Mormonism, that we can make room for each other, that we can accept that somebody may believe this is literal and somebody else may not. And that's okay. And we can say that, you know, for me, this is the way it is, and accept that. And so it's a beautiful experience for me. It's often a lot of work, but the stories that we get to hear from people that join the group are sacred stories. It's an incredible, incredible thing to find out that you're not alone and that there's other people like you who are really working to try to make peace in their lives with whatever is best for them. So I'm grateful to be here with you. I'm grateful to be a part of the A Thoughtful Faith group. Grateful for all of these good people. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. What to say? Who wants to follow Jerilee? Nobody. Not online, not in person. Because she is magnificent. She's a force of nature. And if you've spent any time in ATF, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. I am Susan. I am a lifelong Mormon. I am a lifelong struggler. I don't want to get too deeply into that because I've got a whole session about that coming later in the weekend. So if you want to hear about my struggle, you know, you can do that. But what I do want to tell you about is how that kind of intersects with finding myself in online Mormonism and in ATF in particular. So along about my 50th birthday, one day I woke up and I realized I didn't really believe in the afterlife, or I didn't really know was there one. This was shocking to me. This was shocking. And I didn't really even know what to do with that. It was around the time my father-in-law had passed away. I guess maybe it was the first time that death had connected with me in that close a way. And I realized I had no idea about an afterlife. And we were just driving down to, I was driving down to get a Diet Coke with my husband. And I casually mentioned on a Saturday morning, I don't really know if I believe that there's an afterlife. And he about drove off the road. But he said, well, that's fairly foundational. I think maybe you should do something about that, or, you know, think more about that. But he was clearly alarmed by it. And I understand that because I was alarmed by it. It's like the bottom dropped out of everything. And after that, the unraveling was really fairly swift for me, because if you lose the afterlife, you lose a lot of things. You lose a lot of things about Mormonism. And so, but I still wanted Mormonism. I wanted it. So I didn't really know what to do. The first thing that I had to do was untangle faith from belief. I had to completely disentangle those things, because I could feel that I was a faithful person. My belief piece was gone. And I had to untangle those things. And what I realized as I really started to dig into that in myself was that for me, faith didn't have anything to do with what I believe. I could no more choose to believe something than fly to the moon. I don't even know what that means, choose to believe. And John Grimes and I have argued many times about this. We argue about this. But for me, choosing to believe is not an option. Belief is something that happens to me or doesn't happen, and it unhappened in this case. So that was not an option. But, you know, faith to me was my hope, and I still had tremendous hope. I had tremendous hope. There were things that I still wanted about Mormonism. I wanted them very deeply on a level even I maybe didn't really understand. So for me, faith became, I call it my hope-given legs. That's the only way I can think of it. I have hope. I keep walking in a certain way. And that is faith to me. And so in a way, I didn't feel like I really had lost everything. I had just had to change the way that I thought about it. But I needed somewhere that I could talk about these things. And my husband was not that person. He's a magnificent person. He's a nuanced thinker. He's all these things. He's marvelous. He's my rock. But I realized in that moment that I told him I didn't know if there was an afterlife, that this was not going to be an ongoing conversation that we were ready to have. Just wasn't going to be. So I needed a place. So I started just kind of looking around online a little bit, and I wandered into a group called Exploring Sainthood. I don't know if anyone here is in ES, but used to be a wonderful group. Wandered into Exploring Sainthood. I was kind of looking at the conversations. I was very intrigued. Saw an opportunity I couldn't pass up, made a dirty joke, because it begged to, like, how could you not make it, right? It begged. But suddenly, for some reason, like, at least all the men in the room really liked me. It was just a very weird thing. I was like one of the guys all of a sudden. And so they asked me to join the mod team. Really, I'd been in online Mormonism for like approximately 20 minutes, you know? And I find myself on the mod team at ES, and then I find myself as the editor of the blog and all these things. Just jumped right in and got involved. But, you know, so Fred Rogers has this wonderful saying that is, if we can mention it, we can manage it. And I realized, when I first heard that line, maybe 4 years ago, I realized that explained everything about my problems in Mormonism. I had literally never had the opportunity to mention what was going on for me. That space did not exist. That opportunity had not existed. And I was dying. I was literally dying inside for not having a voice. I have never felt more silenced anywhere in my life than I have felt in Mormonism. So I found a place where I could mention things. And, you know, ES was a great space. ES kind of evolved and changed. Most people were transitioning out of Mormonism. I still felt a tremendous need to grasp the hope that I wanted to have. I did describe myself as a hopeful agnostic. I sort of do describe myself that way. But, you know, emphasis on the hopeful part, because I really am. There's something about it that I need. So ES didn't really suit my needs over the long haul. But I found my way into ATF, and that was a space that really answered my needs, because there is just pretty much nothing I can't mention, but we are somehow managing it all together. And it's just a really beautiful way that that is happening. It's amazing to me. I feel like I really am among my people for the first time in my life. That's how I feel every time I log on to ATF. I wrote a post earlier in the week, I guess. I stopped in St. George on my drive up from Phoenix, and my dad said, "Would you like me to give you a blessing for going to Sunstone?" And you have to know that I was raised in a home where, like, Sunstone Mormon was a very derogatory term that was applied to people, right? That's a specific thing. It's not a thing in my house. And so for my dad to be very excited that I was coming to present at Sunstone and to say, "Could I give you a blessing?" And this is my dad that's been living on borrowed time for 20 years. So, you know, it felt, there was a lot of weight in that moment for me somehow. There was a lot of psychic weight there. And so I said, you know, yes, I want that. And so, you know, he put his hands on my head, and it was the most specific, the most personal, the most amazing blessing that I have ever experienced. It was something I've never experienced. And I know that there's a lot, you know, wound up in that because it's my father, for one thing. So, you know, there's all the feelings going on with your aging parents, and all that's definitely there. But there was something else there, and there was something beyond hope for me in that blessing. I just describe it as something with a capital S. That's all I wrote in the, you know, post, is like there was something. And I needed a place to share that. Now, when I wanted to share it, and I wanted to come to ATF and share it, but I was kind of worried, because, I mean, there are a lot of conversations that go on in ATF about, you know, do we believe in blessings? Is an interventionist God? Does any of this mean any? You know, people have so much emotion and so many feelings about these things as a result of the experiences that they've had in their own lives with blessings. But, you know, I needed to share it. So I wrote this post, and I, you know, carefully set it down in the group. And it was a perfect, perfect kind of microcosm of what is so wonderful about that group, is that I could come in with a spiritual experience that I had that was very genuine to me, that even I didn't understand and is like a little outside the lines for me, and need a place to set it down with people who would respect it, even if they're really struggling with that belief for themselves. And I did not get 500 likes, but I think I got over 200. So, like,
that's awesome.
You know, they're like, it was good. It was a good moment, right?
Lots of loves. Yeah.
Lots of loves. There were lots of loves, but it was amazing support. And that is the thing that ATF has done for me. It really has enabled me to stay in Mormonism. It has made enough space in my life that I have room for the things I don't understand and for the beautiful things that I continue to experience in Mormonism. And anyway, that's my story. If you're not with us, and if you think it would help you, I hope you'll join us, because I would welcome conversation with all of you. Thank you.
Which one? Yep.
Okay.
I want to add one thing, that Susan's first day in A Thoughtful Faith, she was asked to be on the moderation team.
I mean, you're all taking 15 minutes. I said 7, you know.
Well, I can take 30 seconds.
No, don't do that.
No.
Do it. This is great.
Okay. So I'm Cynthia Winward, and I live in Provo, and I live with my husband and my 3 kids in what, from the outside, I think looks like a very mainstream Mormon family. I've been a stay-at-home mom for a couple decades. You know, my 3 kids, of course, are beautiful. I can say that because they're adopted, so I don't take any credit, because I have these 3 beautiful children, a wonderful husband who's kind and loving, and, you know, in many ways, I felt like I had it all. And then, like any of us who live in a family, things happen, right? And all of a sudden, it all hits the fan. And it doesn't even matter what it is. You know, it could be maybe a chronic illness, it could be LGBT issues, it could be addiction. You know, life is just messy. And for me, I found myself at church, and for the very first time in my whole life, and I was turning 40 this year. These ladies said they turned 50, so I'm a little jealous. They got an extra decade of maybe peace and solitude. For me, it was the year I turned 40 when it all hit the fan. And I remember being at church one day, and kind of similarly to what Geralee had read about this post she had read, you know, someone said, I read the scriptures, we did family home evening, we did all this, and things haven't worked out for me. And I remember in that moment saying that same thing to myself in church, and literally kind of looking at the edges of the chapel saying, who else feels this way? Who else feels like they are in the margins? Because I feel like, at least for me, the church had worked fabulously when I was very mainstream. When, you know, it answered all my questions. It filled every spiritual, you know, question I had. I really felt like this worked for me in every aspect of my life until it didn't. And then when it didn't, I had a need to talk about it. And church is the last place, ironically, that we can talk about these things, right? Like, it's just, well, you know what I mean, right? It's just a difficult place. Sometimes, you know, it should be a hospital, and often it's a showroom. You know, we're there to just show off how, you know, amazing whatever is. And so, so like so many of you, I joined some online groups, some LDS groups. And there is an LDS group for everything, isn't there? Like, you name it, there is a, you know, an LDS group for people who love potted plants. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. I know someone who's in that kind of a group. So anyway, so I found myself joining a few of these groups, and I wanted to talk about these issues that trials bring on in our life, these faith issues. And I started talking, and I felt like the Pied Piper. You know, so I'm there, and I'm bringing up these issues, and people are following me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the moderator pulls me aside, electronically pulls me aside, and she says, Cynthia, we can help you with a lot of your issues. We can't help you with all of them. You need to tone it down. And I felt crushed. I thought, I can't talk about this at church. I can't talk about it in an LDS support group, which is, you know, where you think you could talk about faith issues, because I think she really saw me as the Pied Piper. You know, people are following me, and I said, no, they are just going through the same thing too. They're just afraid to bring up what some of these faith issues might be. And then that summer, I discovered LDS podcasts. And I found Dan's first, and I found specific topics that related to exactly what I was going through. And I thought, holy moly, there is a whole group of Mormonism out there that they are willing to talk about the things that go on in the margins. And I just started listening voraciously, and that's kind of how I had heard about a Thoughtful Faith group. And so I joined it, and I feel like these are my people. You know, these are the people that are willing to talk about, is there a life, you know, after death? Is the, you know, anything is well, not anything, right? Because that's why we have moderations. But for the most part, if there's, you know, a faith issue, we're going to talk about it. And so this kind of sums up here. I'm going to read this to close what I'm saying. And we write Sunday posts, kind of happy Sabbath posts. And I just wrote this a couple months ago, so some of you might remember it. But like when I was introduced, I love to cook, and I love to make, like, curries. And so I'll get out my spice grinder, and first I'll, you know, toast my fenugreek seeds, and I'll toast cumin, and I'll toast cardamom, the world's most underused spice. Like, it's my favorite, you know. It's yeah, rice pudding with cardamom. Mm. So anyway, so I this is how I like to cook, right? I'm not going to buy curry powder in a jar. I'm going to, yes, thank you, Mark, who lived in India, so that makes me feel good. So that's how I like to cook, and I kind of likened it to how my faith has evolved. So I'll just read that really quickly. I have been transfixed with those new companies that deliver a meal in a box. They collect all the ingredients at a straightforward recipe and deliver it to you chilled in a neat little box, all ready for you to begin cooking. You won't have to make any substitutions. You'll follow exactly what the recipe says, and you'll hopefully get the same outcome as the picture on the recipe card. Minimum effort, maximum output. As a collector of cookbooks and a lover of cooking, I could never use a meal-in-a-box service. It would take all the meaning out of what cooking is to me. Reading cookbooks like novels, dog-earing pages, watching YouTube cooking videos in foreign languages. I don't even know what they're saying, but I'm just so transfixed with these women in India. Tracking down exotic ingredients. My curiosity gets satisfied when I cook my way. My creativity has an outlet. My soul is filled. I realize that meals in a box are very convenient for a lot of folks. The work is lessened. The thinking is done. The stress is minimized. Just add water and stir, so to speak. It's a brilliant business model. I wish I had thought of it. Likewise, faith in a box worked really well for me most of my life. It provided the scaffolding I needed. In a manner of speaking, the recipe was already written for me. I just needed to add obedience. The ingredients were delivered. I just needed to exercise a particle of faith. I loved it. I really, truly loved my first half of life. Add faith and stir. Structure and certainty are the hallmarks of Mormonism. I never went looking for uncertainty. But as Peter Enns said, doubt happens when needing to be certain has run its course. Faith in a box had run its course. It did accomplish its goal, but it was time for me to move on. I fought it, and I became spiritually anemic. Why did I have to move on? This isn't fair. Why does faith in a box work so well for so many, sometimes forever? The temptation now is for me to assume that my fellow ward members are less nourished than I am, that they need to read what I have read and experience what I have experienced. As frustrating as church can be, it really isn't my place to tell them how to feed themselves spiritually. We often speak of big tent Mormonism here in ATF. I desperately want my Mormonism honored. The goal is to honor their method of worship as well. Dang it, that's hard. Nobody rushed me. Can I not extend that same courtesy to others? That has been my goal of late. So, do Mormonism according to your needs, from a box or from your heart. There is room for them. There is room for you. Deliciousness comes in many forms.
That was great. My name is Richard Osler. My kids named me Papa Osler on Twitter. That's where that started. And I joined ATF in about 2015. I was called to be a singles ward bishop in Salt Lake City, and the first 2 years of that assignment was pretty normal. But one of the things that started to change because of social media, I started to meet with the members of our congregation that were not active, and they felt safe talking to me because some of the things I was posting on social media. And that was the first time I really listened to people that had stepped away from the church or were not engaged at the church. And some of the narratives that I had picked up started to melt away as I just listened to people. God gave me the gift to listen, and I felt the best thing I could often do in my assignment was to listen and listen and listen. And that was very helpful for me. The policy statements came about a year before I was released, and that was the most difficult thing yet that I've crossed in the church. I just felt somehow my own team turned around and kind of punched me in the gut. And versus somebody on the other side of the line jumping the line and punching me and my whole team rallying around me, it was sort of like someone on my own team did something that really hurt. And I didn't know why it hurt. I don't have any LGBTQ people close in my life, and we just had a few in our ward. But it was just kind of a new path for me. And now I sort of frame up my faith as kind of like an 80% TBM, whatever that is. But I have fallen dominoes. That's the best way I can communicate how I feel, is I have fallen dominoes with some of the things that I feel about the church. But they hit, for me anyway, they hit some dominoes that have some pretty deep roots and didn't fall. And that's been real stable for me. But part of being real stable is connecting with ATF. I have a cousin in ATF, Rob McMaster. I don't think he told me about ATF. But somehow I learned about it. And Rob had kind of been mentioning some things about a Facebook group. So I think he followed all the rules. But eventually I made my way in there. And Geralee did some really good vetting because she was a little worried about what tone I would take in ATF, and that was very proper and very helpful. But ATF means everything to me. I needed community. I wasn't finding people in my life that I could turn to talk about how I felt. And that happened for me in ATF. So Susan, Geralee, Mark, and Cynthia in some ways saved me because I had a place to go to talk about how I felt. And then I found Robin there, my first cousin that we've grown up with, and realized that Rob has some really thoughtful things. So ATF has been a safe place for me. It's also been very helpful for me to listen to voices there. At some point in my life, especially with LGBTQ, it just became clear to me that I needed to kind of wipe my hard drive clean, and because straight people have told me my whole life how to feel about LGBTQ people, and I just said, God, I just felt this impression to go meet with LGBTQ people, and God said, I'll teach you about these children of mine, but you got to go meet with them, and then you're going to learn. But ATF has connected me with many, many issues. I hadn't been very aware of women issues. That didn't come up too much in our singles ward. It's not a conversation in our own family. But, you know, this is where these great women that sit here and in ATF have really helped me to understand as I've listened to their stories. And so that's just an example of what it's done for me. And as I didn't really realize I'd get into social media, and so sometimes what I'm able to do in social media is try to take other things, other perspectives, and bring them through my social media so that we all can learn and understand better. So I'm very grateful for ATF. It's helped me immensely. I didn't realize the emotional sort of turmoil I was in. In fact, I saw a counselor the last 6 months of being a YSA bishop. I think my gas tank got so low and my own faith was struggling that I needed ATF and a counselor. As an aside, the counselor ended up being incredibly helpful, not to me, but she, often I would take a situation to her with her clinical training on a YSA situation, and she taught me things that I had never been taught about how to be helpful for someone. She taught me the iceberg concept, which is sort of this idea that sometimes bad behavior or sin is above the iceberg, but we need to maybe put that on the shelf sometimes and figure out what's at the bottom of the iceberg. Then sometimes it gives context to the bad behavior, and sometimes the bad behavior really isn't very bad behavior. So I kind of wish every leader was teamed up with a clinical person or there was more of that kind of training, because that was just, you know, just very helpful to me. So that's a little bit of my journey. I tease sometimes on ATF that I'm surrounded by TBM people, my wife, all my kids, their spouses. Our dog is TBM, I think, our delivery people. So I don't know if that's good or bad. So we don't talk too much about some of the things that are in my heart and in my mind, and I'm grateful for the ATF community where I can share these thoughts that are in my mind in a faithful way. So that's a little bit of my introduction. Thank you.
So it's about 6 o'clock, and we first of all, I really appreciate all that you said. A lot of things I didn't know here. I mean, this is really interesting. No, so thank you all. So opening up the questions to you all for if you'd like to come up with a mic here, or if not, I can certainly direct questions. Purpose here is to be informational about the group and about any aspect that you feel is important, and we'll answer your questions. Hopefully, we don't need to go all the way to 6:30. It's dinner time. I'm recognizing that. If you have a question, it's a question. It's not a platform to talk. So come on up and give us a question if you have anything. Anybody would like to come up? Come on. Oh. Question though. Short.
All right. I'm a TBM, but I'm viewed by everybody in my small town that has small town mentality, and I didn't grow up there, etc., as should be excommunicated, can't be trusted to have a church calling, cannot even be a visiting teacher. Does anyone have a suggestion other than shut your mouth and don't tell any of your non-conforming kind of ideas to anybody? Any advice that you want to give?
Thank you, Louise. That's a good question. First of all, I think that you don't really have any problem expressing what you feel. I mean, I've noticed that. So that's a good thing. In fact, if you're okay with the repercussions, which there will be, then being open with what you feel is a great way to be. It's a cost, but I do believe that being yourself and being authentic is probably the single most important thing that we can do. And the more that we can do that, the better it is. A thoughtful faith gives us an opportunity to vent when we can't in church. It also gives us the opportunity to learn how to express things in a little bit more supportive way. And sometimes that looks difficult as we moderate some of the discussions, as we try to keep it positive. And we don't always get it right. But I'll tell you this, the idea of being able to engage with authenticity and to be who you truly are, Louise, I think that would be, I think it's great. I honor the way that you do things, even if it could be disruptive. Russ? Well, it's being recorded, so if you could...
Step to the microphone.
I know. It's a walk.
Sorry.
Wherever the questioner went, and for the AFT,
ATF, you know, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
That's really appropriate. That's better than the word of Windsor. I just think...
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That would be very relevant to you moderator folk,
okay,
people.
Through the microphone, can you say that one more time?
R-S-N-T-M-N-T. Resentment without the vowels. It
cute.
Is incredible how simple and powerfully helpful it is for people in crisis.
Love it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good suggestion.
Stick to that.
Come on up.
I came in late. I was at another one, and it was kind of boring, so I thought, this was my second choice, and it should have been here. So I heard about a thoughtful faith through, I'm wanting to know the relationship between your group and Gina Colvin's A Thoughtful Faith podcast.
That's a really good question. So the A Thoughtful Faith podcast is a part of the Open Stories Foundation. John DeLynn runs the Open Stories Foundation. John DeLynn started our group several years ago. Gina is her own woman. She chooses her own topics. And sometimes those topics deal with things like political type topics or whatever that might be outside of our focus for discussion in our group. So Gina chooses her own topics, and she's on her own journey, which we all honor. And so she posts the podcasts in our support group that are topical to our focus, if that makes sense. That's kind of the way it goes, because she certainly has freedom to do her own feeling, you know, to follow what she feels called to. So does that answer your question for you? So we do share the same name, but not always the same focus, and that is a little confusing.
And the first moderators of the Thought Fit podcast were these group, the group moderators too, and they have left Mormonism. And
right.
So
and they started the podcast originally, and then Gina took over. So hope that answers the question. It's been a topic of discussion, but
that would be very helpful.
I think it's probably a really good idea. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, come up to the microphone if you have a question so we can get it on the recording.
I have so many questions, and I love all of you, and I love the ATF Ward so much. I wondered how many members there are, and also just like if you've noticed if there is kind of just a need to come short and then just kind of, or if there's this core group that stays a long time. I'm just curious, like, if what the need is, and then also I'm just also curious, like, how you decide who moderates what, and if you, like, so I want that one, you know?
Those are good questions. I'll take that. Last I checked, we have about 3,200 plus. I think we're on our way to 3,300 people. And I think for some people, it is a step on their path, but not a place where they stay. We have some people that I hope will be there forever, like Kim Pusey, for all of you that know him. I hope Kim will be with us forever, right? So it's different for different people, and but I still really believe that there is a need in our Mormonism for people to be able to come and say, wow, I'm really hurting, and I didn't know these things, and I need to be able to talk with other people. So did I answer your question? It was kind of threefold. Did I hit them all? Oh, moderation. Okay, so if there's a concern with something someone has said or a post, then generally one of the moderators, whoever sees it, will bring it to the moderation group, and we discuss it. So when any kind of moderation action happens, it's not one person acting alone. It's been discussed, and we decide among us, like, who's going to handle it or how it's going to be handled. Sometimes we try not to do it in public. We try to take it to a personal message. People, because Messenger is quirky, people don't always see our messages, you know what I mean? Because unless they look in the message request, so that's sometimes a little challenging. But we do, or sometimes on the thread we'll say, let's talk in PM, something like that. So hope that answered it.
Yeah. First of all, thank you all for all you do.
Thank you.
Kyle. Yeah.
I just want to say that all of us are here because this group is important to our journey, too. We're not just here because we want to run the group. So it's important. You all are important to us, too.
Thank you. So Mark mentioned that of all the people who wrote essays, only one left the church. It seems like...
In that text.
Yes. It seems like, and maybe it's just my impression, that a lot of people come to a thoughtful faith and they basically are there for a little bit, and then they go to a thoughtful transition, and it seems like a lot of people, the trajectory is out of the church. When you compare that to the people, you know, the original essay writers, I would think that it would be easier to stay engaged now, but it doesn't seem like that's what's happening. Do you think it's easier to stay in the church now? If not, why do you see so many people?
Well, in 86, it wasn't bad to stay in the church. I mean, that was still in the Camelot years. Mm-hmm. Although the prophet that came into play in 86 was Ezra Taft Benson, precisely. So, and from there, there was pretty much a sea change that culminated in 93 with the September 6th. So, I don't know. I think that Phil cherry-picked a set of scholars, many of whom were employed by the church, you know, as BYU professors, but Richard Bushman, a patriarch. I mean, you have a select group that are probably a little bit closer to the line than we are, with the exception of maybe Papa Osler here. But to your real question here as to whether this is a way station on the way out, I hope not. I really don't. I mean, I appreciate every journey. That's not our focus. It's not a way station to figure out how you're going to resolve getting yourself out of the church. I don't believe in a way with a destination. I mean, you all who know me know that I speak about this thing called the way, and the way is the process of life. And the process of life continues. It's eternal progression. And so to my mind, it doesn't matter where we exercise our faith transformation. It's that we do it, and that we do it well as we can. And yeah, you can do it inside the church, and you can do it outside the church. And our focus happens to be those that are trying to make it work inside the church, or at least in a way meaningfully engaged. Not everyone in a thoughtful faith has to be a member of the church. But their attitude has to be to say, I want to be meaningfully engaged in this community and in this church. And that's the operative thing. Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add one thing. And actually, John asked Dan, Mark, and I this question on a podcast about a year ago.
The one I got in trouble about?
Yeah, the one you got called into your bishop's office for. I actually think the LGBT policy makes it a lot harder for a lot of people, and I don't think that's something we can really overlook. I just think it does. So as a part of my answer to your question, I think that makes it harder for a lot of people. Thanks.
Thank you. Susan?
Thanks, Kyle.
All right.
So when I first came into the group, I remember, my name is Madison Daniels.
Oh, yes.
So I've been in the group for probably a year and a half now or so. So when I first came into the group, I remember having almost an impression. Of course, I was like half asleep when I read through the first questions. But I kind of felt like I had the impression that it was a little bit like Fight Club, that you don't talk about Fight Club. And so I...
That's true.
So I know that I have family members who I know are like in the process of having a kind of a faith journey themselves, but I'm not really aware of all the issues that they are aware of, and I feel like a couple of them could really benefit from being in a group like this, but I'm unsure about how to approach them about maybe, joining or whatever, because I feel like it's like Fight Club and I can't talk about it outside of Fight Club. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
That is a great question. Thank you. So we do take confidentiality in ATF very seriously because we all need it to be a safe space, right? People need to be able to go there and share their stories without their name or what they said being taken outside of the group, right? So that's the reason for that. One thing that's really important to us, and we've learned this in time, is that at the very least, we want to know they've read the essays. We would like that they knew more than that. We highly recommend use the footnotes on the essays, because there's much more information if you spend some time with the footnotes than just reading the essays themselves. We don't want to make anybody's faith journey more painful. So for quite a while, we had a lot of people referring from the LGBT community, go join a thoughtful faith, go join a thoughtful faith. But what we found is we were admitting people who weren't aware of the messy history and doctrine, and we were putting them into a place where their faith journey was now more painful. And so we don't want to do that. That's not our objective. We're there to support people, but we're not trying to expose people to all the issues, right? So I would start with the essays. If you're not sure about your family, I mean, that is a safe resource. It's on the church website, right?
I mean, I know that some of my family has read them.
Is the question, though, how do you refer them to the group?
I know that you don't invite people to the group, so that's not how I would do it. But I know that
they request it
on their own.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jerilia, but you can let them know there is a group out there.
Okay.
Suggest it. Talk to one of the moderators and see if you think this is at a good place in your journey for this group.
Okay. To refer them to us, or even if they sign up for the group.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. But the point being is, understand the criteria for what it is,
right.
And I do owe Geraldine a little bit longer post on what it means to be a member of the group. I think I dropped that ball.
Mark's our writer.
So I'll try to make it a little bit clearer on that. I think you're raising a good thing, Madison. We'll try to make it a little bit more clear.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Andrew.
Or George.
You can call me whatever. The question a couple back about the article writers who, of them all, only one left, kind of got me thinking about something you had mentioned earlier about can we choose to believe, that sort of thing. It seems to me, and I'm going back and forth with this, that there's a sort of temperament to make it work, and I know that Danis also started taking this. But at the same time, there seems to be this idea that maybe some of this can be taught and that we can kind of learn to live in ambiguity. So what are some things that you think are things that can be taught, and what are some things that you kind of look at and you think, maybe this person is just, not going to ever be, there's just no amount of work that they're going to ever be able to get there, if anyone is.
That's a super, super good question. I'll have something to say to Andrew on this, but...
One thing I've tried to talk about in church and through comments is can we teach curiosity? If you can be curious about someone else's journey, usually that's almost enough to walk in their shoes a little bit. And I watched this TED Talk that said for someone to be curious about a topic, they have to at least know a little bit about that topic first. And I feel like that's something I'm trying to do in making comments in church is very safely, you know, bring up little issues and maybe just a smidge of it. And then often that invites people, they'll text me that night, huh, what did you mean by... And so I feel like just giving people a little bit of information opens the door for them to be curious about something. That is something, if I could sprinkle pixie dust in my ward, it would be a pixie dust of curiosity. I just want people to be curious about how other people, what their challenges are, faith beliefs, what their life is like.
Love that, Cynthia. Great question. I've been thinking a lot about Brené Brown's book, Braving the Wilderness. I've read it 3 times now, and it's giving me sort of foundational principles to navigate this space. And one of the things that I've thought about every morning walk for the last couple of weeks is this idea of fitting in versus belonging. And I think this group probably understands that fitting in is we have to become something we aren't to fit in. And it's a square peg in a round hole. And I think we need to be able to teach this principle of belonging, that we belong to our congregations and we belong to Christ and God based on who we are and how we feel. And so I feel really strongly about that. I mean, I have fallen dominoes, but you may have more or less, but it's not my job to sort of say how many fallen dominoes you should have, or it's my job to honor you where you are, not to think anybody needs to be fixed or anybody needs to change. And I think we need to feel permission to feel how we feel. I don't know where we got in this business where we don't give people permission to feel how they feel. And that, to me, seems so fundamental to God, how he created us. So it's not, I don't know how to do that, but I think the principle that we could teach in our congregations is we want people not just to fit in because they all match the certain criteria, but because they belong here and because it's their community based on how they feel.
First of all, great answers. I need to address something that I'm feeling badly about, okay, and that is stating that 21 out of 22 of these authors stayed in the church is a shitty thing to say may be true, but it raises an expectation. I do not believe that 21 out of 22 people having a faith crisis today will stay in the church, no matter how faithful we think we are, period. It's too hard. There are too many things that are very, very difficult. I do not recommend that any LGBT person stay actively engaged in the church right now. It's just my feeling. If you want to, and obviously John Gustav Rathel gave a wonderful talk, and I love him. I mean, what power. But I just don't know how a person can subject themselves to such negative things. Now, the truth is that most of the people are ignoring the policy. That's the truth. But I study something that says that if you make a law and then you don't enforce it, it's almost worse because you're creating a selective priesthood roulette sort of thing that's really, really ugly. So, Andrew, I apologize for that thing, because I think, seriously, we shouldn't be building the expectation that this is for everybody. A thoughtful faith is not for everybody. Staying in the church is not for everybody. But finding the community and the place where you feel called is. And so for anybody engaging, I think the question has to be asked, where do you feel called? Where is your personal journey taking you? And if that is hopeful agnosticism, great. If it's anything else, great. Anything else? Good. Okay. Thank you, Andrew.
Hi. Matt Kern. I've been in the group for probably 3 or 4 years.
You have, Matt.
My question is, it might be a mini why I stay, but my question to each of you is, what are your top 2 or 3 reasons you're actively engaged in Mormonism?
Come tomorrow to the why I stay to hear Susan. She's on the panel. She doesn't want to spoil her presentation for tomorrow. I feel even amid all of the difficulty, I feel somewhat like this is my home and worth trying to fight for. And I am uncomfortable and comfortable at the same time. And I'm in a really incredible situation where I feel like I have integrity with all the people that matter in my life about where I'm at. My husband, my bishop. I have
a bishop who would be every ATFer's dream. And so I'm in a comfortable place with that now. So I find that this journey is fluid for me. I have a hard time even being willing or wanting to really nail down belief, because the way I live my life and the goodness I find in my life is more important to me than that. And so if I can continue to find a space where I'm comfortable and feel, you know, welcome, then I'm gonna stay. I've never really had a desire in my heart to resign. But I see the problems for what they are, for sure, and I feel the pain, and I honor the journeys of my children and many people that I love who don't stay. So
it's a great question. Is it Matt? I think I stay. I first wanted to answer by based on the dominoes that haven't fallen, but now I think I just feel this is what God wants me to do is stay. I feel just this is where I need to be, and I believe enough to be here. I think a couple of those dominoes that have really deep roots is I believe I hold the priesthood, and I've seen priesthood blessings, and I've felt God talk to people through priesthood blessings that I've been honored to give. So I just feel, for me, but I certainly, like everybody else here, understand where everybody else is. I don't feel any need to be prescriptive to anybody on what they should or shouldn't be doing. I always think my job is to sort of get on their road and support them the direction that they need to feel. If they're unsure of the cross or they're unsure of where they're going, I might offer suggestions to make a thoughtful decision. But I really, even when I was back as a singles ward bishop, tried not to be prescriptive in saying this is what you should do, but give good principles and then give support.
I think for me, I could say 100 things, so I'll just say one thing, and that I feel like Jesus Christ passes the smell test on every single thing for me. Everything about his life, everything I've studied, it speaks to me, and sometimes it breaks my heart because I see the difference between maybe how the church is being run and how I think Christ would run it if he were here today in charge. And so I have to make a distinction for me between the gospel and the organization. The organization often breaks my heart, but I feel like the gospel has been very healing to me.
Appreciate that. So just briefly, I mean, what Richard said in terms of feeling called to it is really the primary driver. But aside from that, I do believe in the concept of Israel, and Israel means the person who struggles with God. And so years ago, I had a chance to sell my company, and I had a year off of working, and I got really engaged in interfaith affairs, and I got engaged in some political stuff. I helped organize the worship service for the 30th anniversary March on Washington in 1993, and I did some composition of Christmas music. I was doing everything I wanted to do, you know. And at the end of the year, I was clinically depressed. Okay? And I learned something, is that for me, for my personality, being involved in the struggle is life-giving. And I like this. I like the idea that we have this group. This group actually saves the church for me, because otherwise it's the Sunday school and priesthood would be pretty intolerable. I can moderate on, you know, Facebook while I'm sitting in church, so I enjoy it. Sarah, you have a question.
Yes. I know it's just supposed to be a question, but I just feel a gushing, and so I'm going to have a quick comment first. That it's so amazing to see these faces and to see people here, because I feel like I've experienced a sacred space with you all in bringing part of my struggle and my trial and my faith and leaving it, like Susan said, and placing it in your trust. And I have felt so loved and so comforted. And so I feel like Zion. So I'm gushing. So you'll have to forgive me. But I feel very much, like you said, this saves the church for me, because this is, I believe, how we're supposed to be. My question is this.
I have served for the last 7 years with children. I've been in the stake primary. And I have, at the same time, experienced a husband transitioning out of the church, and I have wanted to scoop the children up and not protect them in a way to keep them in the church, but protect them from feeling pain and betrayal that I have seen in other people. My question is, how would you have my own answers and my own thoughts, but how would you propose we help the next generation, not perhaps so they don't shelf things or perhaps so they can face potentially what I feel is a big crisis in my generation, particularly right now?
That's a really good question, and since my my children were all adults pretty much when this hit me, I've often wondered how would I do things differently in my own family if I knew then what I know now. And I don't really have the answer, but I did teach things so black and white, and I would not teach that way. When my kids came home from young men's or Sunday school or young women's lessons, I would ask them, what did you talk about, and how does that make you feel? How do you feel about that? Rather than shoving it down their throat, because that's exactly what I did. This is the way it is. This is what the church teaches, and so this is right. So there are some things I would do differently. I don't have all the answers, but I think that's a really great question, and how do we help our children? I think we can point to things like the essays in for family home evenings and those kind of things. So that one of the things that breaks my heart, because I know two young men who went out on missions from my ward that this happened to, is that we're sending missionaries out on their missions who are not learning about multiple versions of the First Vision and polygamy and polyandry and Book of Mormon translation and those kind of things. And then they're meeting investigators with smartphones who know more about the church than they were ever taught in church or at home. And both of these two young men in my life came home from the church. They testified to these investigators, this is not true. I was raised in the church. This is anti-Mormon. And they came home and learned through Google that the investigator was right. And that breaks my heart, that we are not properly preparing young men and young women to go out on missions. And so I think your question is so important, and I think it's something we all should focus on. I have a nephew that lives in Kaysville, and he is a member of ATF, fairly silent, but he recently was put in charge of a youth conference, and he took him to the church history library up in Salt Lake. And my brother, his father, was with him, and he was sending me all these little things and saying, Craig is getting peppered with questions. And anyway, so, you know, he took that opportunity to say to the kids, there's more to these stories than what you're hearing in your correlative material. And I think we're out of time.
But Sarah, thank you for your comments. And I think I think the important thing that, you know, I've learned from this and I continue to learn from this is that we do have a chance to change our own lives. And if in the process the other people's lives change, you know, then we can rejoice in this thing. There's something so great about community. And this, you know, Sunstone has given us an opportunity to be able to bring it here. And, you know, next year in Jerusalem, we will have our ATF gathering. Oh, no, it's Salt Lake. Next year, we'll have our ATF gathering. We have seen that some people have been getting gatherings around the country. It's rare, but the in-person community is part of it. As long as we keep understanding how important faith is for us, thoughtful faith. And thank you all for being here today.